That's Paul Rosen. We're back. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I thought that was appropriate because we're going to be speaking to Fred Jerome, author of The Einstein File and other titles, and we'll get to those and remind you about them. I think Fred Jerome has joined us on the line. Are you there, Fred?
Yeah, I'm here, Phil. Thanks a lot.
I assume you recognize the name, the voice of Paul Rosen. You had encounters with him.
I'm sorry you had to cut him off. I would have liked to have heard more.
he's a little hard to follow, Fred, but I know you can do it. We're very anxious to know your views of something, I guess. On one hand, we're kind of pleased that it happened. Based on Walter Isaacson's biography of Albert Einstein, the National Geographic produced a special miniseries called Genius. And it was, I guess we'll have to ask you about what they thought they were doing, et cetera. But you've written a lot about Einstein, and you've always pointed out, and we've talked to you about it on this show, that there are very important matters in Einstein's outlook on the world that he put a lot of energy into and a lot of passion that, for reasons known to them, people like National Geographic and the people who made Genius kind of leave out. So let's talk about let's get your reaction to the series itself and what's missing.
Well, basically, the three books that I've done on Einstein, published on Einstein so far anyway, been about Einstein's politics. And he was a very political scientist, not in the sense as a political scientist cliche, but he was very concerned about politics. And somehow or other, in the biographies and articles about him and stories about him, you almost never hear about this. The picture of Einstein that has been portrayed over the decades is this sort of bumbling, absent-minded professor, kind of a humanist, kind of nice, sometimes kind of not knowing where he's going. You know, they'll joke him, am I going east or west? And then he asks one of his neighbors, and the neighbor says, you're going east. And he says, oh, then I must have had my lunch.
Okay.
So there's the absent-minded, bumbling, nice guy professor.
Yes.
But very little about his politics, which I'll talk about in a minute. Then in this series, which was just broadcast on National Geographic's channel on cable television, which is a 10-episode series called Genius about Einstein, and presumably, or they've announced they're going to have other geniuses with series about them following. But in the 10-episode series about Einstein, we've got a much more detailed account of Einstein. Unfortunately, very little more about his politics, although there was a little bit, which is something, I suppose. I'll talk about that in a minute. But many people saw this series because it got a good deal of publicity, and even though the National Geographic's cable channel is not the easiest one to get, many people did see it. And what they did was they created a very sort of a sympathetic human being. Well, sympathetic is the wrong word. They created a human being they made Einstein into a human being instead of an icon. And so all the millions of people, thousands of people who viewed him as an icon, you know.
Yes.
Suddenly discovered that here is this human being with all kinds of problems that human beings have. And it was much more interesting to see that than to get involved in that, the life of such a person, than to just see the statue, this icon all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the human being that they created in this series was not the human being that Einstein was, and that created, if you're interested in accuracy and also in Einstein's politics, that created a problem. But I should say to start with that people did have a favorable response to this idea that here's a human being. Tell me when to stop. I mean, I don't
want
to go on and on.
No, but, well, I do have a question that fits into that point, because I notice, and I think it might be the impact of your work, the Einstein file, J. Edgar Hoover's Secret War Against the World's Most Famous Scientist, and a second book, Einstein on Race and Racism, and thirdly, Einstein on Israel and Zionist and Zionism, his provocative ideas about the Middle East. You know, this is a great body of work, and we're speaking to the author, Fred Jerome. The term I noticed they use, and this is Ron Howard talking, I think, he says, well, you know, Einstein was at the center of so many political events in the 20th century, and, well, that's true, but what were some of those events?
Right.
And I know that you have a theme that you strike often in your writing, is that in trying to understand these matters, they're certainly when it becomes to the mainstream, they erase the left. They really can't deal with it. And that's why I wanted to play Paul Robeson at the top of this.
Yeah.
Einstein and Robeson created something called the American Crusade to End Lynching. They co-chair.
In 1946.
Right. Yeah. Now, could you talk about why would that be left? Why wouldn't Paul Robeson get a part in this story?
Well, here is this to come back to the Genius, the 10-part Genius series that was just broadcast, and the 9th part, or the 10th part, near the end of the series, they did mention that Einstein spoke at Lincoln University in Pennsylvania, which is a black school, a black college, the oldest black college in the U.S., and he spoke there in 1946. And most people probably, I had no idea that he spoke there in 1946, so there was a mention of this fact, and I think that was good. But they give you no idea as to why he spoke there or what else was happening at the time.
Yes.
And in fact, in 1940, so it comes back to the question that you asked, which is not just what did he do, in this case, to speak at a black university or speak out on the issue, some issues of racism, which they didn't mention in the program, but the question is why? Why did this happen? What was happening in the country, in the world at the time? And as a matter of fact, in 1945, the World War ended, and the American troops who returned from mostly Europe and Asia and Japan included maybe close to 1 million African-American soldiers who had fought in the war and seen their buddies die and had risked their lives and fought, you know, heroically. But I won't go into the whole thing about their role in the war. It's been discussed in detail. And as they came home in 1945 and 46, there was a wave of lynchings of black people in this country, which... dozens of lynchings. I don't have all of the details, but you can look it up.
And many of veterans, because they were wearing uniforms.
Lynched. Most of the people lynched during that period were African-American soldiers returning from the war. Mm-hmm. And so you had a situation where these people had fought and risked their lives for freedom and were on their way back, many of them to southern states, which still had Nazi governors and senators and so on, or the equivalent. And they were being lynched in this country. And was faced with that, in that situation, that Einstein went to Lincoln University to speak in April of 1946, when he almost never went to universities at that point in his life, mm-hmm. and decided to go to Lincoln. And again, the without knowing that, it's a little hard to understand why did he do that.
Yeah, and by the way, isn't that where a kind of rubbing or erasing goes on so that he becomes a liberal? Because we say, well, he's a nice liberal. Here's a picture
right.
of him.
Nice guy, right.
Yeah, here he is.
And they also left out his speech, and they left out the words that he said when he spoke at Lincoln, which was perhaps the most important part of what he said, was that he said segregation is a disease. But it's not a disease of people of color. It's a disease of white people.
Very important.
And so they forgot to mention that.
Yes. Yeah, because then, if they stop there, it interrupts the flow, as it were, and everybody's going to have to say, oh, wait a minute, we better think about this one.
Right, exactly.
Or we
exactly.
better think, which is another big problem.
Right. And it was precisely because of this lynching wave that was taking place that some of the lynchings actually made the front page of the New York Times and were pretty gruesome and horrible, that Einstein and Paul Robeson co-chaired, and they weren't the only ones, but there was a committee called the American Crusade to End Lynching, as you said, mm-hmm. and W.E.B. Du Bois was involved, and there were many white and black radicals and liberals and so on involved, and they went to Washington to protest, to demand that the government pass anti-lynching legislation, which the government refused to do, and President Truman basically threw the delegation out of the White House. They went to visit him in the White House, and he said he'd heard enough, and he threw them out. But without knowing what was happening, of course, they didn't even mention the American Crusade and lynching in this series, but even if they had mentioned it, you would have to know what was going on in the country at the time to understand why Einstein and Robeson did what they did and why it was so important.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm so glad you tell that story. I have to say, I recall, and you must be aware of this too, when they did punish American soldiers for a violence against civilians, proportionally, almost 80% were black.
Absolutely. I don't think anybody was punished for these lynchings, or very few, if anyone. But you're right, there was the black soldiers who were punished the most.
Yeah. We're speaking to Fred Jerome, and you have to know there are three great titles: The Einstein File, J. Edgar Hoover's Secret War Against the World's Most Famous Scientist, Einstein on Race and Racism, and Einstein on Israel and Zionism, His Provocative Ideas About the Middle East. Incidentally, Fred Jerome is also the author of a great essay titled Kill Bernadotte, the story of the assassination of the UN official Bernadotte in Palestine in 1948. By the way, Fred, that book, The Einstein File, is going to be reissued, right? Is it going to be a new publication?
Yes, actually, the publisher of the new edition of The Einstein File is Baraka Books, Canadian publisher based in Montreal. Mm-hmm. And we're looking forward to it.
We know it will be... A quality and uncensored.
Absolutely.
Speaking to Fred Jerome and Fred, you told, it seems to me, it's such an important story, but to understand Einstein's character, one of the words they use is they like to say humanist, and that pretty much gives him a pass. He gets through the door. But
right.
Actually, you see Einstein, who was a fighting man, in a sense, and when McCarthy and HUAC went after American so-called Reds, that he gave some advice, and it made the newspapers. Tell us that story.
Well, in the McCarthy period, the McCarthyism actually extended beyond this, but McCarthy himself arrived on the scene in 1950 and didn't last too long before he got thrown out. But for about 4 or 5 years, McCarthy and McCarthyism were rampant, and the headlines in almost every day's newspapers had headlines about McCarthy accuses this one of being a communist, accuses that one of being a communist, and so on. Most people have heard about the Hollywood 10, but this went far beyond that, and it was mainly targeting people who were organizing labor unions.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, faced with that situation in 1953, when most people were still very frightened and afraid to answer questions and didn't know what to say. One of the people who was subpoenaed was a teacher in New York named William Frauenglass, Frauenglass. And Einstein, he had been active in organizing activities in high schools in the city to protest racism, to racial discrimination against blacks students and teachers and so on, and demand more black teachers. Anyway, he was subpoenaed by one of these committees, and Einstein sent him a letter saying that urging him to refuse to answer questions before the committee. And in discussing that with him when he sent him the letter, they agreed that Einstein would also send that letter to the New York Times, a copy of the letter to the New York Times, and expecting fully that the New York Times would put it on the front page, which they did.
Wow.
This was a fairly big news at the time when nobody was protesting McCarthyism, and Einstein told a teacher in New York he should not answer the questions and be prepared to go to jail if necessary, because that's what people of conscience should do if necessary.
This is a combative Einstein. This is not a rollover guy, or this is not a ivory tower left guy with, you know, sparing a few minutes. He was looking for a fight if he put that on the front page of the New York Times.
Absolutely, and he was nervous about it. I mean, he did say to his friend and financial advisor Otto Nathan, who was a good friend of his, and he said to him, the day before the letter appeared on the Times, he said to Otto Nathan, "Do you think I will go to jail?" and while that may sound totally ludicrous, don't forget he had also defended, he had come to the aid of W.E.B. Du Bois, the great African-American, the great historian, who was also African-American, and had been indicted by the federal government in this country in 1951 for being a foreign agent because he was distributing the Stockholm peace petition.
Yes.
Einstein had come to his aid when he had been brought into court and brought to trial in a federal court. And Einstein had offered to testify as his first defense witness. And when the judge heard that, the judge dismissed the case. But Einstein had seen this man who was 83 years old faced with going to jail.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he said to Otto Nathan, "Do you think I may go to jail for this letter being on the front page of the New York Times?" It wasn't as crazy as it sounds.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, the letter appeared and caused a tremendous uproar, as you can imagine, and many, many letters of sympathy, support for Einstein came from around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was the same day another man who was subpoenaed by a different committee read about it, and he refused to answer the questions. And 6 months later, in the same year of 1953, in December of 1953, another person who was subpoenaed named Al Chadowitz, who I actually interviewed because when I was writing the book, he was still alive. He was living in Florida. I went down there and spent some time talking to him. Al Chadowitz refused to answer questions put by the McCarthy Committee. And Senator McCarthy said to him, when he refused to answer the questions, he said that Professor Einstein had advised him to refuse to answer the questions. That was one of the reasons he gave as for refusing to answer. And McCarthy said to him, "Einstein advised you? What did you do? Go to his house, knock on his door, and say, 'What should I do?'" And then he told you not to answer questions. And Chadowitz said, "That's exactly what I did." And in fact, it was.
Yeah.
He didn't know where Einstein lived. He knew he lived in Princeton. He drove his old car into Princeton, and he stopped some teenager on the street, and he said, "Do you know where Professor Einstein lives?" And of course, everybody in Princeton knew where Einstein lived. So the teenager directed him to the house. He knocked on the door and so on.
"What do you want me to do?" Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Now, if McCarthy had gone to Einstein's house, we could have solved all these problems.
I know, right. But it is a great, it really happened in both within 1 year, within 6 months. And you can imagine that the tide of fear in this country was turning, and this was a big factor in helping to turn the tide against McCarthyism.
Yeah. Well, by the way, Fred,
and I was all left out of this.
Your account of Einstein is a much more watchable film than the one that they had.
I'm going to write something about the film proposals that I've gotten, because this originally the first edition of the Einstein file was published 15 years ago, mm-hmm. and the Einstein on Race and Racism, which I did with the co-author Roger Taylor, that mm-hmm. was published 11 years ago.
Princeton.
And we've had several film offers and some theater drama offers, but mostly film offers. And it's interesting if you look at them, and I say I'm going to write about it, because every one of them wanted to change the story to make it a better Hollywood movie.
More sex.
And, well, most of the films wanted to create a good FBI man who was on Einstein's side and against Tour.
That's a very interesting theme.
Three production companies, totally not in touch with each other, but all within 1 year, made offers to me, and they all included that in their offers. It was just fascinating.
Another disease, Fred.
That's right.
They all suffer from it, and they don't even need to know each other.
Yeah.
Well, now you're going to write about that, so I'm going to have to ask you to give us first dibs. We want to talk to you as soon as this is done, okay?
All right. I'll be happy to do that. It'll be soon, but I won't put a deadline on it.
Fred Jerome, The Einstein File, and thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Phil, for having me again, and I look forward to talking to you again. Not too far off.
Okie doke. Bye-bye.
Okay,
thanks.
Bye-bye.
That was Fred Jerome, and this is the Taylor Report, whether we like it or not. It's CIT 89.5 FM. Oh, we had a little piece of music we're going to play. This is Leadbelly.